Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Today on Rambling About Cars, arise, arise now, ramblers of cars. Rumors will be shaken. Records will be splintered. A horsepower day, a teaser day ere the sun rises. Roll now, for it is podcast time. I am Christopher Smith, my very confused co-host.
Is that Chris
Bruce is across the way?
What is that a quote from?
That's Lord of the Rings, man. That's Lord of the Rings.
Okay.
When you're talking about a vehicle that sets 23 new performance records, which we're going to talk about in a bit.
Yeah.
That's kind of dramatic. So it's like, well, okay, records will be splintered. Ooh, this is my chance to do a little bit of Lord of the Rings. So,
okay. Yeah.
There was my new intro that won't happen every time because my accent is terrible. But I thought I would give it a try this time. Ramblers, welcome to the broadcast. Once again, catch us live right now. Motor1.com on Facebook, Motor1 on YouTube, Motor1.com Twitter. You can join the conversation as you comment there on those social channels. We will see the comments coming in. We're seeing some favorites come in right now. Group FBC, EKG Canadian. Thank you for joining us. We're giving things a little more time for people to join in. And if you happen to miss the live show, you can always catch us on Motor1.com on YouTube. The video goes up there after the show ends. We're also, every Friday, we go up still on Spotify, Apple, Deezer, iHeartRadio, all kinds of streaming platforms. We're there for you. And you can always email us, podcast@motor1.com.
That's right. And in personal car news, I own a running Mini again. So I'm happy about that. Yeah, got it running over the weekend. So took it for just a little drive because we weren't up there that long. But we'll be back this weekend, and I plan on taking it for a pretty good little drive. So
nice. Now, are you like me where the best performance mod you can do is to just not drive it for a long time, because then you get back in and you're like, oh, this feels kind of fast. This is all right.
Yes, a version of that. Like, I got back in it. I'm like, oh, this feels exactly like the last time I parked it. It's perfect. I love this car. I understand why I was missing it. Like, yeah, so super happy to have that back.
Yeah, well, that's great. I would love to say that my Mustang is now not leaking coolant, but I'm still getting little drops somewhere. I don't know if it's just from, because I did a water pump replacement.
Exactly. That's what I was gonna say. A
couple weeks ago. And taking everything, I didn't drain the radiator out. So, I mean, as I'm taking hoses off, things are gushing everywhere. Right. So I don't know if there's just still some residual, like hiding in frame rail somewhere, but still getting little drips. But it's been warm, so I've been going out for some top-down enjoyment. And of course, now it's back to like 50 degrees Fahrenheit today. So
sorry, this just popped into my mind.
Uh-oh.
As you were mentioning that. Are all Mustangs unibody, or is there a body on frame one? They're unibody back at the beginning, aren't they?
You know, I've never really looked underneath one. I think there's I better not say. I better not say for sure one way or the other, because that's just going to make you look like an idiot.
You were talking about frame rails, and I'm like, is it body on frame or is it unibody?
The newer ones are certainly unibody. And yes. I mean, I still have like subframes and things like that are up there in the way. So
anyway, talking about
random
bits of Mustang knowledge Well, I know our boss Seth says there's no difference, but damn it, when I was brought up and trained to write about cars, there was a difference. The quickest car in the world.
Quickest? I mean, it goes back and forth. Quick, fast, fast to me is a measure of ultimate speed. Quick is how fast you get to the ultimate speed.
That's what I was always taught.
But we're one big inclusive family.
Right. Yeah. And that is that the Remots, and yes, that is how I've been instructed to say it by some people at the IEVs team. And it might look like Remock, but the proper pronunciation is Remots. Nevera set 23 acceleration and braking records. This was at the automotive testing Papenburg facility. They've got some 2.5 mile straights there, which means, you know, you can go flat out. And Smith, lots, this is what I thought was really, really interesting. They invited two companies to independently verify the results. Mm-hmm. Not only did they do that, they then published all of those results. So I'm going to show you a table here. Mm-hmm. We have, so we can say Race Logic says it goes 0 to 62 in 1.82 seconds. I think it's DuaSoft, I imagine. Maybe it's DuaSoft. I'm not honestly sure. But they say 1.81 seconds, you know, because they obviously have different stuff that they're using. Mm-hmm. So there are these, like, you know, it's a hundredth of a second.
Yeah.
Counting. But it's still fascinating that they published both of these. Like, if you don't believe one of them, then believe these guys.
Well, and it's not just that they published both sets to me. It's that both sets are pretty much damn near the same. Which shows, okay, there's some serious consistency going on here.
Yeah, and I mean, hundredths of a second here or there. It's, yeah.
And I mean, then you have the numbers themselves. 0 to 60 miles per hour, 1.74 seconds. And the Remot was very clear in saying, okay, this is not on a prepped surface. This is not on a prep surface, not running specific race tires. I think they're running street legal, Michelin Cup 2.
Pilot Cup 2Rs.
Yep, Cup 2Rs, which are technically street legal, obviously.
I would say.
Caveat
that just a tiny bit. It was not a prep service in the case of, like, where we saw with the Demon 170. It's clearly an immaculate surface, though. There's no potholes. This isn't, like, your normal. This is essentially a racetrack, not actually a racetrack, right, because it's for automotive testing purposes. But this is pristine tarmac.
Right. I can say this since I'm a Mustang owner. It's not like the dusty intersection leaving cars and coffee when you roll on the gas a little bit and things happen. Yeah. 1.74, 0 to 60. Some of the other notable records here, the standing mile, 20.62. Okay. Pretty good. 0 to 120, 4.19 seconds. How many seriously fast cars go 0 to 60 in 4.19? This is going 0 to 120. 0 to 200 in 10.86 seconds. There are still a fair amount of cars that do 0 to 60 in the 10-second range. Of course, I mean, I'm talking about just more
economy cars. You know, yeah, smaller hum cars.
Drivers, economy cars, things like that.
Yeah, but still.
it's blisteringly fast. The 0 to 249... to zero, that was outside of the United States, that 0 to 400 kilometers an hour back to zero, 29.94 seconds. Our
29.93 seconds if you believe the other testing equipment.
So it's a little bit quicker. As our colleague Adrian pointed out, he's the one that wrote up this this feature. It goes 0 to 249 to zero quicker than a McLaren F1 got to 217. Of course, McLaren F1 is, you know, a 30-year-old vehicle now, but it's still considered just a blisteringly fast machine by any standards. And yeah, 23 records. It's an EV. It's seriously impressive. I mean, there's a reason this article has just been getting all the clicks here. It's big news. And I mean, I think it's a testament to electric performance.
Yep. And for anyone out there who doesn't necessarily maybe know the numbers off the top of their head, I will share it with you. The Nevera uses 4 electric motors. In total, they make 1,914 horsepower, 1,741 pound-feet of torque. Obviously, it's all-wheel drive because you've got, you essentially have a motor driving each wheel. It has a 120 kilowatt-hour battery. And something that also Adrian pointed out in the story is that before this test, Ramatz quoted the 0 to 60 time as 1.85 seconds. And then they put it on this, you know, the surface, and it did it in 1.74 seconds. So it was even, you know, a tenth of a second quicker than they even claimed it was.
Yeah. And I just wanted to share from Group FBC makes a really good point. The real impressive times are the splits. Example, the 100 to 200 kilometer per hour sprints. That I totally agree there. When I was doing a lot of drag racing, to me, the more impressive numbers weren't necessarily like your 60 foot time. I mean, obviously a good 60 foot time is going to give you a better time at the end of the quarter mile, but seeing what a car was doing like mid track. I mean, if you're struggling with traction, that doesn't necessarily give you a good idea of the power that's being made. But when you're turning in really good numbers and really good trap speeds mid track, that's like, okay, there's some serious power here happening. You just got to get it to the ground. Obviously, the Navara is getting it to the ground, it seems like, at all levels. Because, yeah, I mean, some of those split times, just insane. Just insane.
And it, Adrian didn't include it in the table here, but he just put it as a paragraph. Not only are the speeds impressive, it also set a new record for the shortest braking time from 62 miles an hour. It can come to a stop from 62, like I said, in 95.53 feet.
Yeah. And I mean, we're talking about an EV that, generally speaking, heavier than most combustion powered performance vehicles.
I can't remember exactly what the weight is on here, but 4,739 pounds.
So, I mean, we're talking almost 2.5 tons.
Two tons and change. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. We're talking about almost 2.5 tons pulling up at 95 feet. That's impressive all around. Impressive all around. So well done, Ramatz. Where do we go from here? Who knows? But I mean, you've heard me say it before and rambling about cars. I love combustion power. I love the noise. I love the feel. But I am not the least bit worried or upset that that EVs are coming. You have this kind of performance. I'm not really worried about how it sounds to get plastered into the seat like that on acceleration and then to come to a stop like that. Yeah. The G-forces, if you've ever been on a track where you can really push a car, yeah, the sounds are great, but experiencing that G-force, I mean, that gets me more than the sound, to be honest.
Also, I want to point out with Group FBC here is the 1.8 original time might not have taken account rollout. That's a good point. The 0 to 60 times and 0 to 100, there's a 1 foot rollout added into that.
Yep, there is a little bit of a rollout here.
I mean, 1 foot, I think, is the standard, isn't it?
Yep.
Eric Nephron GFR, the CATL battery, that's when things will really change. Is that the same as solid state, Eric Nephron? I'll be honest with you, I haven't heard that term used before.
I've heard it, but see, this is where we need to have some of our Inside EVs friends on here. We're not quite as in depth as they go on the electric vehicles. But yeah, we're seeing advances in batteries. I mean, at this point it feels like on a semi-annual basis where there's some big change. So, we're still really in the beginning stages of all this. It's only going to get better. And I'm fine with that. You know, I've used this argument many times. I promise you back in like 1905, 1910, somewhere around there, there were people just swearing up and down against this noisy machine that couldn't possibly replace my horses. It's a machine. It doesn't have the soul of my horse, right? So I feel like we're kind of there right now, right?
Yep. Thanks, Eric. He says the CATL are semi-solid state, yep. 500 watts per kilogram, which is about double what a modern battery does. So
We have the greatest listeners. Thanks for chiming in.
I appreciate that. But yeah, just a super impressive car. It's it kind of makes you wonder, like, what is, because we now, Rimac and Bugatti are now together. Porsche, Rimac, but Bugatti, they kind of all one big family. So it makes you wonder, how do you make the next Bugatti special when this exists?
I think the answer is obvious. Hover conversion kit.
Okay, sure. Maglev.
Okay, where we're going, we don't need roads. I think it's time. And I'm not talking about the flying cars that are really airplanes with wings that fold back. I want my hover conversion kit, and I want it to go like the Jetsons.
Just super interesting. Obviously, this is, super, super rarefied air, an incredibly pricey vehicle. I do wonder, does Rimac eventually have, their Ferrari fighter? Do they eventually have like a Porsche 911 fighters? They kind of bring that lower and lower in the range just to make this. You wouldn't get this type of performance, but still what they are doing to bring that to more and more customers.
I agree. We're getting some comments from EKG Canadian. New Range Rover is better than the Bentayga in every way, and only the Rolls is better. Is that a sign that maybe we should move on?
I guess so. Although the next thing we're not talking about is the Range Rover. You got to wait one more segment, and then we will get to the Range Rover.
Yeah, we're going to get to the Range Rover because we have news there, but there's also a little interesting backstory that I want to give with that. So stick around for that. We will be getting to the new Range Rover news. Right now, we're going to talk about another off-roader.
Yes. Wait, another off-roader? You can't take this off-road.
Rover. If you miss an Apex, you're going to take the Nevera off-road.
Sorry, Range Rover, and then.
Sorry, that was a reference to Range Rover, and we're going now to a teaser.
Yep.
Came out here, and. If the GMC Canyon AT4X,
we had this
AT4X. Damn it. I was even like trying to consciously catch myself. If the GMC Canyon AT4X isn't quite aggressive enough, there's an AEV edition coming soon.
Yeah. To me, this kind of it's surprising and not surprising. They already have an AEV Sierra 1500. Mm-hmm. They have an AEV Sierra HD. It makes sense to do it for the Canyon. It's kind of coming out of nowhere, though, in a way, to me at least. So,
no, I mean, you're not alone on that. I mean, they're certainly going a little bit more hardcore with the GMC trucks. I guess I'm picturing the GMC buyer maybe being not quite as interested in the extra AEV, versus, maybe somebody getting a Colorado.
Maybe.
Am I off on that? Am I off on that?
I think you're a little off base. You're not completely wrong, but I still think there's a buyer for a truck like this. But before we get into that discussion, let's tell people what we know, which unfortunately is not much. Like Smith said, we just got this teaser today. It shows the AT4X AEV edition rock crawling. The major thing that you will notice on this are the additional skid plates. You can see they run basically half the length of the truck. You can see a little bit of... drive shaft there at the back, and the rest is all skid plates. On the standard AT4X, you only get a single front skid plate, and this one is clearly much longer. I wrote up this story. I spent a bunch of time trying to look at the AT4X and this, and I can't find any other differences.
That's generally par for the course of the AEVs usually add some trim enhancements You know, to make it look a little more rugged. I think sometimes maybe they some wheel changes.
A different wheel and tire package, which we can't see here because we can't, you know, we can see the inside of the wheels and the tires, but we can't see the outside. Mm-hmm. So it's very possible it has different tires. It doesn't look like the bumper is different, at least to me. It seems to have the same one from the AT4X Edition 1, just without the brush bar on it. And that that come-up winch and the red recovery hooks, those are all from the AT4X Edition 1. It's possible, though, it could have a different rear bumper, and we just can't see it yet because we can't see it in this photo.
Right. But we know when it's coming, though.
We do. July.
Okay. July 6th? Yes. I'm going completely by memory on that one. How did I remember that one?
Is it the 6th or the 16th? Now I'm messed up. July 6th. And then if you look at the fine print of the picture they put up, it says actual production model may vary, available in late 2023. So we know it'll be on sale before the end of 2023.
Right. And I mean, AEV edition, I mean, if we are talking about a wheel tire package, some extra skid plates underneath, you know, some trim upgrades here and there, shouldn't be obviously a really huge jump over the AT4X.
Well, that's what I pointed out.
I'm gonna struggle with that the rest of the show. Now I'm paranoid.
This thing's probably going to be a bit pricey. So an AT4X Edition 1 is $63,350.
Yeah.
So since this has basically all the equipment we're seeing there, plus the extra skid plates, I would have to guess there are different wheels. I might end up being wrong, but I would bet different wheels and maybe some stuff we're not seeing here. It's going to cost every cent of that, if not more.
And I mean, the that begs the question. I mean, you're talking about a price point that's a very, very healthy full size truck that's that will still have plenty of off-road goodies. But we know, looking at the sales numbers, we know that aggressive, rugged looking trucks and SUVs, People are gobbling them up.
Yeah. And the other thing is there are two off-road oriented versions of the Canyon below this. You have the AT4X and then you have the AT4. So, you know, someone who buys the AEV edition, they are looking at those trucks and said, hey, I've got a little bit more money to put out there, or I like these extra bits. Mm-hmm. I'm going to take that version. But for other people, it's not like you can only pay 64 grand for this truck. There are lesser versions that give you most of the way there.
But more to come on this July 6th, and I'm willing to bet there will be more teasers between now and then.
Oh god, yes. Oh, that, you know, how many Tacoma teasers have we saw more Tacoma teasers since we've covered them?
Yeah.
So
there was just a Tacoma another one yesterday, and we know Tacoma debuts at the end of this week
on the 19th.
Unfortunately we can't talk about it now, but I imagine we'll be talking about it next week. And possibly some other surprises
next week, don't we?
We're working on it. Just a little bit of a preview there. We are working on a special guest next week with a very cool story. But even with the special guest, I think we'll have to talk about Tacoma because that's a huge debut, and our special guest will be certainly primed to talk all about it. So.
All right, so before EKG Canadian completely blows his top, I guess we better move on to the Range Rover, because
it's time for the Range Rover.
Let's give the man what he wants.
It's time for the Range Rover, and this just came up last night. I actually wrote this one. This was kind of a late breaking story that we published last night. I'll just come right out with the main facts, and then I'll give you the little side story here. We're talking about the 2024 Range Rover SV. You now have some different power levels, including a 606 horsepower hybrid version of the V8, the twin turbo V8. So it's pumping up in power. Curiously, there are no performance estimates for the Range Rover SV in that trim. And the SV, I should point out, is the only way to get the 606 horsepower engine. But if that's a little too much, the plug-in hybrid, which is the 550E here, now has 542 horsepower. They just kind of gave it a little bit of an extra bump. And that goes 0 to 60 in 4.8 seconds. So it gets to 60 almost as quick as the Navara gets to 120.
Yeah.
So I mean, you've just got some I hesitate to say minor power upgrades, because anytime you talk about 600 horsepower,
is a pretty major power upgrade, isn't it?
It is. I think it's a big deal. You also have the latest generation of the company's PV Pro infotainment system that goes through the 13.1 inch center touchscreen. You get Dynamic Response Pro, which actually debuted on the Range Rover Sport. It offers better roll control during cornering, so it's more like an on-road thing. But you also have the off-road cruise control as part of the Terrain Response 2 system. There are four settings on that. It basically lets you set a certain speed, just at low speed, crawling over rocks. So all you got to do is steer, and away you go. And also, here's, before I jump into this next part, I'll just say that Land Rover also announced a new customization service, like Porsche manufacturer or some of the other services,
right? Or they, Bentley Mulliner,
right?
Ferrari TaylorMade. It's in that realm,
right? They're calling it SV Bespoke. And if you don't have, if you can't decide on colors or things like that, just through the regular service, this will give you a choice of 391 various colors and materials, 230 choices for paint. That includes satin colors, gloss colors. You can choose custom scripts for various scripting on parts of the SUV. And if you still can't make a decision with those colors, there's also the paint to sample service that can give you anything. Now, there's no mention of how much this will cost. Obviously, I suspect that would depend on what you choose. For example, one of the options is having badges in gold, gold badges. So some nice nifty ways to really spiff up your Land Rover. It's only available for Autobiography and SV models, if I remember correctly. But what's weird about this announcement came in late yesterday evening. Mm-hmm. And we only had we got it about an hour ahead of time before we have what we call embargo sometimes, where we'll get information ahead of time. We can't talk about it until a certain time. So we only had about an hour, which usually isn't a lot to work with.
No,
but it came in late, and I was still on. So I grabbed it, and the press release was like, Land Rover has this new SV Bespoke service. So I just kind of glanced at it really quick. Okay, well, that's why we only have an hour. Interesting news, but it's not earth shattering. And then as I'm going through, they mentioned, oh, by the way, here's the 606 horsepower engine option now. And it's like, what? I mean, it was so awkwardly worded. If anybody's listening from the Land Rover crew, let me just offer some friendly advice. That was
from a former PR professional to current
from a former PR professional. You kind of buried the lead on that, because the SV Bespoke service, that's pretty cool and all, but the real meat of this was, hey, the plug-in hybrid has more power. There's the new 606 horsepower engine option, and it was so confusing. I actually had to call Brandon Turkus, our managing editor. I called him from the bullpen. The poor guy. He was like logged off, getting ready to sit back, enjoy a nice, comfortable evening at home with a cool, refreshing beverage. And he's the resident Range Rover guru. And I'm like,
yes, Brandon loves himself a Land Rover.
I'm like, Brandon, am I missing something here? Because this is some significant information. This just kind of stuck like three quarters of the way down this press release. So, we kind of went through and pieced it together. And he's like, yeah, obviously you want to lead with that. It's like, yeah, that's 606 horsepower in your Range Rover SV. We're leading with that for sure. So it's just a little side story there on some of the things that happen in the world of automotive journalism.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah, hey, I think
you were talking a lot. I want to know, you're a listener. Tell me why you think the Range Rover is better than the Bentayga. I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just curious. Nice vehicles.
There is a mention here. New Range Rover, EKG Canadian says new Range Rover is better than outdated Bentayga in every way. It is an older model.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, it is. But I can't fight you there. I'm just curious. Like, because to me, they both seem like very nice vehicles, vehicles that I will never own and don't entirely interest me. But so, yeah, I was just curious about why you thought that. But
well, if you have a response there, obviously chime in. We want to hear. We want to share with all of our ramblers here.
We'll throw it up and discuss it. Yeah.
While we're doing that, I will say that the Range Rover SV for 2024, or the Range Rover, not the SV, but the Range Rover, does have a new starting price of $108,895. If I remember correctly, I think, I mean, the SV and the autobiographies, you're getting up north of $200,000. So certainly pricey machines, and you can deck them out with their SV bespoke service however you want.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, wait. Can you get gold badges on the Bentayga? Huh?
Actually, I think you can.
I think if you through Mulliner, Bentley's version of this SV bespoke, I bet you could. If you
I think you can.
If you just keep throwing out money, I bet they'll do it for you.
I think you can. Luxury SUVs that I will likely never own. I say likely because you never know. You never know.
It's just that it's not a segment that really interests me. It's, you know, it's just, I don't entirely get it. I respect people who like, they really like them. It's just, it's not my thing.
Yeah. I would agree with that. If I want a luxury vehicle, I guess I don't really care about one that has all kinds of off-road chops.
Yeah.
Because I would feel really bad about even venturing close to somewhere where I might get some branches to put some scratches in the side. But you know, that's me. I've got a $3,000 Subaru that I just waxed up. That's black that I don't want to take down some trails. So
fair.
There you have it.
I think we should move into the Tesla portion of our show, which is something we've probably said one other time before this, because you and I, we don't usually talk Tesla. It's not usually, you know, it's not usually a topic that comes up for this show. We leave it to the folks at Inside EVs. But
right. Before we jump into that, I just want to give a shout out. Their podcast, their live podcast, goes out Friday mornings, Eastern time. And
9:30?
If you enjoy watching us and you want to have a little more electric coverage, I mean, they are it. They have.
Yeah. And I will bet dollars to donuts. They will be talking about this on their show too.
Oh, I can guarantee, because this all comes, all this news is coming about from Tesla's shareholder meeting where Elon Musk was speaking. And what came out of that, Bruce?
Well, they showed off their next new model.
Sort of.
Well, we don't know. Let me pull a photo up here. Yeah, let me do some stuff in the background. You vamp a second, and then we'll get into it.
I mean, Musk was teasing technically two new models, and an image was shown, just a silhouette that surprise. It kind of looks like a Tesla. Is it a Tesla Model Y? Is it a Tesla Model 3? Is it we've been hearing about a rumored Highland model. But well,
that's the code name of it. Yeah.
Right. Right.
And that is apparently the refreshed Tesla Model 3. Mm-hmm. The image that we're looking at here. And yeah, I know it's dark, but it's a teaser image. That's what they gave us, is what Elon showed during that presentation. And I'm going to pull this up. I'm going to take this down because you can barely see anything. Mm-hmm. But our colleagues at Inside EVs recently covered this. Which they think might be the same vehicle, and that is the Tesla Model 3 refresh. And it does, you know, we can't see a lot here, but it kind of matches up if you think about taking this vehicle and turning it at 90 degrees. What he was talking about could be the new Model 3.
Right. And I mean, when you go through some of the comments that I've seen on social and over at InsideEVs.com. Again, Inside EVs, they're our colleagues. They're on the electric portion of things. If you have any questions on electric vehicles, they have answers. And yes. I can't stress that enough. Musk was talking about two new vehicles, and he seemed to suggest that we're working on all new things. And some of the questions I've seen popping up are, okay, well, if we're talking about like a Model 3 refresh or even a different type of Model Y, is that really a new vehicle? Some people were saying, well, maybe this refers to the new Model 2, which is supposed to be like the $20,000-$25,000 Tesla that you can get. Some people were saying, well, it's probably referring to Cybertruck, which technically still hasn't come out yet.
Not technically, it still hasn't come out yet.
You know, it was mentioned back in, was it 2018
or 19?
18 or 19. I mean, it's been a while.
But I say
technically, technically hasn't come out yet, but it was at least announced, right? I mean, we know it's in the works. This felt like he was saying two things completely new, and that's where there's a lot of just a lot of fogginess happening, exactly what he's talking about there. Because there were some, I mean, there were some other claims that he was making. He was saying the two new vehicles he foresees could possibly, rake in what, I think 5 million sales combined. And now we're getting into some Musk-isms, if you will, that may not be based in reality.
So Julian, who wrote this up for Inside EVs, he was kind enough to include, he transcribed some of the things that Musk yes. said about it. So let me go ahead and read that.
Yes, please do.
These are Elon Musk's words. People always want to know what our next product is, but this is not the time to unveil it. We obviously need to have a proper dedicated product launch, Tesla CEO said during the presentation. And as he said that, he pointed to the teaser image I just showed you of a very shadowy vehicle. I just want to emphasize that we are actually building a new product. We are actually designing a new product. We are not sitting on our hands here.
Now, see, to me, that points to not a refresh, not Cybertruck, because Cybertruck already had a launch, although I guess at this point you could probably consider that a concept, because obviously there's been considerable development happening and the vehicle that will come out won't be what we saw so many years ago. So I mean, to me, that sounds like something completely new. So Model 2 maybe?
Well, here, let me read. So Julian, yes, also did a second portion, and I will read these sentences now. So there are two new products that I think you'll be very excited about, and both the design of the products and the manufacturing techniques are head and shoulders above anything else that is presently in the industry. If I were to guess, just these two new products alone will probably make, obviously, this is just, Elon's guess, so don't sue me. No, those are his exact words. Those are his words.
Yeah,
in excess of 5 million units a year of these two models combined.
Now, he has to be talking about global sales there.
Oh, God, yes. That's got to be global. But so this is what he said. And why are we talking about this? Because I actually just learned this today. Tesla is 60% of the EV market in the United States. Mm-hmm. They're responsible for 60% of EV sales. When they announce a new car, that means something. You can love Elon, you can hate Elon, whatever, but they are clearly a major player in that industry, in the industry. And so them announcing that a new vehicle is coming is worth us discussing, in my opinion.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Yeah, no, I'm there fully on board. And you know, our friends at Inside EVs, I mean, they had a lot to say. There was actually a follow-up article that just went up today talking about Cybertruck. Musk estimates Tesla could sell 250 to 500,000 Cybertrucks yearly. Again, I mean, we're getting a lot of estimates, but we also know that things like the Tesla Roadster 2.0 that was
That's our next topic.
2022, so, then 2023.
Now he says it's coming in 2024. That's what he said.
Maybe.
He said hopefully. Hopefully. I don't know how to take hopefully, but hopefully it is entering production in 2024. This was a vehicle that was unveiled in December 2017, and they said it would launch in 2020. Now, hopefully 2024. So
I mean, I'm not on here to be a Tesla basher.
No, we're not bad. But
the vehicles are interesting.
The vehicle is coming in 2020 and in 2017, and now it's 2023, and you're saying it's coming in 2024. Those are just the facts of the. That's just the time frame. Those are just the facts. And obviously,
the last few years there have been some significant challenges. Obviously, all automakers and pretty much every sector of the manufacturing world, you know, has faced. But I think it does bring an air of questionability to some of the other things that he's saying. Am I fair to come to that conclusion?
What do you mean by questionability? That we should question the time frames that he gives? What do you mean? Sorry.
Oh, like when he's saying, you know, I think these two vehicles combined could sell 5 million units a year. Okay. Where is that estimate coming from? Right.
Sure.
Where is that estimate coming from? Okay. Two all new vehicles, the way it's presented. Okay. Are they really all new vehicles? You know, that's what I'm saying. I find myself more and more skeptical.
I think we should be skeptical about anything automakers tell us. I think that's for the best that, mm-hmm. Anytime, you know, these are corporations and these are companies and their goal is to make money. And anytime they tell us something, the reason that they are telling us that is in some way linked to that goal. And so there's nothing wrong with being skeptical about anything that we're told, about any time a vehicle is teased or anything like that. You know, it's one thing, I guess, when you have like the GMC Canyon that we were just shown, that is clearly a real vehicle. It is coming, you know, versus when you get teasers, and we see these a lot where it's just like a simple sketch or a really dark picture or something like that. And it's okay to be skeptical about those things.
Well, just going through some of our comments here as you were talking, some of our ramblers that are chiming in, EKG Canadian definitely has strong feelings against Tesla. Group FBC was saying, don't sugarcoat it. Elon's dug his own very deep hole when it comes to being able to trust his claims. Pretty harsh for sure. Aussie to you. Sounds like a great time to buy Tesla stock. That I don't know if you're being sarcastic or not.
I don't know. Do not take financial opinions from rambling about cars. Trust me on this one. I've been having enough problems with dealing with insurance companies and banks. So,
but I mean, for everything that we're seeing here, though, I mean, Tesla, they're still selling a lot of cars. If I remember correctly, I think Tesla was the best-selling electric car maker in the world last year. I would have to go back and look at some of our Motor One number stats. We have a really great team across the pond in Europe. They spend a lot of time every week putting together. I mean, just going through various stats numbers that they can research that they can find up. We post those articles up every Friday. And if I remember correctly, I mean, Tesla's selling a lot of vehicles.
Right. And I just wanted to point this out to go back to something I was saying earlier. Battery electric vehicle registrations in the United States from January to March 2023, Tesla holds 60% of that market. Non-Tesla brands are obviously the remaining 40%. So it's, they're a big player, undoubtedly.
Well, Well, if you can vamp for me just a second, Bruce, let me actually bring up one of these articles here since we're
absolutely
got a little bit of time and we're talking about Tesla here.
I'm looking forward to some of the stuff we got coming up, because if you think I've got a grain of salt in my mouth now, wait, you folks just wait. But yeah, Tesla is a fascinating company. Since I've moved to Columbus, I see them all the time now, whereas where I previously lived in Bowling Green, Ohio, which is a much more rural area, mm-hmm. there was like two in my neighborhood. Now they're all over the place.
Yeah. So, so we just ran this. Actually, I think this was last week's Motor One Numbers series. Now, I'm not the author on these. I'm just the guy that brings them in and translates them every Friday. But yeah, Tesla number one and number two in the world last year in 2022. So they are selling a lot of cars. Like Absolutely. Them or hate them, they are selling a lot of cars. They have a lot of customers out there.
And what's number three is the Wuling, isn't it?
Wuling. Yeah, it's a Chinese automaker. Okay. And in China, I mean, there's a pretty big market for EVs in China. So
very big.
I mean, these numbers, like I said, take into account the entire world. And just a little shout out. If you are a kind of a numbers person, a stats person, we do these Motor One numbers articles every Friday. You can catch them on motor1.com, and it's usually valid for, if not just about every region in the world. It bounces around from different regions, so odds are you're going to find something there that might be of interest to you. Just mm-hmm. a little shout out for what we do there. But yeah, Tesla number one and number two in the world in 2022.
Well, moving from vehicles that might happen eventually to another vehicle that might happen eventually, but I'm not so sure. There was a rumor recently that Toyota would like to bring the Celica back.
This one was particularly interesting to me too.
Yes.
Because yeah, it is a rumor. And Bruce, you uncovered this one, I believe.
I did you, yeah. Well,
did you not?
It was not my own original. So there is a Japanese car magazine. It's very enthusiast focused car magazine, yes, called Best Car. And they have a website as well, and they publish stuff there. And to be fair, Best Car, it's like they have their fingers on the pulse of what enthusiasts want. And a lot of times they will make up. Not, I shouldn't say make up.
They're not making anything up.
I chose the wrong words there. They will publish rumors that make you really, really want something. And then sometimes they don't actually happen.
Right.
But yeah. But according to this story, so Akio Toyoda, who is now the chairman of the board of Toyota Motor Corporation, mm-hmm. He said during the All Japan Rally Championship, he apparently said, "I want to revive the Celica." Now, he is chairman of the board. He does not have product planning things in him anymore.
Let me point out, Bruce, he was talking about the Celica and how he liked it, but it was Toyota's current president that said, "I would like to revive the Celica," which I think has a little more bite to it.
You're right. You're absolutely right. Sorry.
That's fair. I thought the same thing at first too, but then when I realized, oh no, they're talking about the current president of the company. Mm-hmm. To me, that had a little more bite. Now, I mean, this isn't, as we read the Best Car story, this isn't a case of we have a trusted source, then we've heard this rumor from, you know, where things are a little anonymous. I mean, they are quoting the president of Toyota.
Best Car reached out to Toyota, and apparently they do not cite who told them this, but it must have been some PR person or something like that, just from the way it's worded. Mm-hmm. A translation of that is the new president of Lexus and the GR company, Sato, who's the new president of Toyota, yep, has the intention of continuing to release GR sports models. Mm-hmm. So they didn't call it a Celica. They didn't say that. They just said more GR models. He would like to keep making those. And so that would be your GR Supra, your GR Corolla, your GR Yaris, if you're in Europe and Japan, vehicles like that.
Mm-hmm. And it's also important to stress here, nobody has said, hey, we're going to do this. This correct. Is just the president of Toyota saying, I would like to revive the Celica.
Right.
But when you have the president of an automaker making a public statement like that, I mean, that's worth commenting on. That's worth reporting on, in my opinion, which is why we went ahead and ran this one, especially since we have the alleged quote. I want to say alleged quote because we did reach out to Toyota North America. Hey guys, is there any way you can determine, you know, you can confirm that your president actually said this over at this event in Japan? Obviously, it's a little difficult to get these things all sorted out and cleared up halfway around the world. So we don't have anything official from Toyota on that. But we still have this report that I think, like I said, we covered it because it's worth talking about.
To me, it's the double whammy. It's the president saying, I would like to revive the Celica, and then Japanese PR saying the president of the company has the intention of continuing to release GR Sports models. So
right.
Maybe you don't call it the Celica. If you remember, you know, the Scion TC was kind of at one point supposed to be the successor mm-hmm. to the Celica. But
obviously, you know, I mean, Celica just has so much, in my mind, so much brand equity. It evokes so many enthusiast heartstrings. And then Group FBC has to come in and kill it for all of us. Careful what you wish for. They could bring it back as a compact SUV, the Celica Cross.
Yep.
I don't know if I would be totally angry with that. I don't know if I would be totally angry because we have the Celica All Track, right?
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Like, what if you did it like Europe has the Puma that they revived as a little crossover, but that thing's kind of cool looking. What if you did like a little like semi rally inspired little crossover and called it the Celica?
Yeah, I mean, I don't
I
know.
I wouldn't necessarily be mad at that if you did it right.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I would be upset by that either. I mean, I'm thinking, obviously, the reference here, Celica Cross, was maybe a toss back to the Eclipse Cross when Mitsubishi came out with that as kind of a...
Well, right. And I would say that's a bad reintroduction of that name. But I think you could do it right. I mean, you know, we've been hearing like that... we talked about the death of the Camaro and, you know, there's rumors it could come back as an electric sedan or to fight the Mustang Mach-E as an electric crossover. It just kind of depends on how you do it. You know, if you're cynical about it and just slap the Celica name on a product that would be crappy by any other name, that's one thing. But if you know, try to evoke things in a different way, kind of like what the Mach-E is doing, it seems like it could work.
Yeah. I mean, if you have the choice of not bring it back or bring it back as a cool crossover, if they inject it with some modest performance cred, it wouldn't necessarily have to be just a small little all-wheel drive hatchback for me.
Exactly. Yeah. Or, you know, and that's the other thing is that the Celica kind of went through, it started out rear wheel drive. And then in the late 80s, it became front wheel drive. And then
all wheel drive
later in the 80s, there were all wheel driver. Like, it's kind of been a lot of things over its life. And so you could, the product planner, which I've never been part of me, you could pluck out certain bits of that history and come up with a really cool vehicle, even if it is a crossover. Like, crossovers aren't bad. I own two crossovers and a Mini. Like, crossover is not a dirty word. It's just you have to do them right, just like any other type of vehicle.
Right. No, I'm with you on that. EKG Canadian, Celica has an SUV is okay for me because, after all, the Celica did come all-wheel drive.
Yeah.
Yeah. We've got some agreement there.
Yeah. While we're getting hopeful about the future,
let's
hit this other one.
Here comes the other
one. This one is maybe even more tenuous, and that is there is a rumor, and this one's definitely a rumor, that Honda could have a new sports car a la the S2000 to celebrate the its 70th anniversary, 75th anniversary.
Right. And we should really start this one off by saying Honda didn't make any sort of mention like we just talked about with Toyota. They didn't say, I would like to revive the S2000.
Right.
They were hinting at a new sports car to go along with 75th anniversary. The S2000 connection came in when they reportedly said, you know, for our 50th anniversary, we did the S2000. Right. So what can we do for a 75th? 75
years is coming up. Yeah. The specific quote, and this comes from Honda of Europe's vice president. His first name, Tom Gardner. His last name's Honda Europe Vice President Tom Gardner. He said, watch this space. 2023 is 75 years. We had the S2000 at 50. Who knows?
Right.
And that's
it. But hearing it come up, and this is something that I've said on Rambling About Cars more than a few times. If Honda were to do another S2000 or something in the vein of the S2000, I mean, the car is known, has just an amazing, fits like a glove. I hate to use that cliche, but it's true here. Fits like a glove sports car with an amazing high revving engine. Mm-hmm. I don't think you get that same magic if it's an EV. I'm not saying that Honda couldn't make a great electric sports car, but if you want to pull on the heartstrings of something in this vein, I think now is the time to do it before you go EV. Am I wrong there?
No. My counter argument would be electric motors rev really high too.
Yeah, but we're talking about two different things here. An electric motor spinning at 9,000 RPM doesn't have the same sound as that S2000's four. So, I mean, that's just,
you're right. You're absolutely right.
That's just a stirring soundtrack. I mean, even hardcore VA guys got to recognize that engine singing up to about $9,000 is just cool.
And EKG Canadian, I want to point out, you say, guys, Honda won't do it. They're very front wheel drive focused. That was true when the S2000 came out. It's not like there was another rear-wheel drive Honda, or, well, I guess, no, they never overlapped with the NSX, did it? Because the NSX, it's not like there was another rear-wheel drive vehicle in their stable that they were using, so.
Yeah. I mean, if they're doing a separate interesting sports car, but again, the only thing we have to go on is this report that was originally published by Autocar. Mm-hmm. And it came out, I think, last Thursday. I think it came out just after the podcast that we did last week.
I think that's right.
You know, dropping these hints. And there are some other sources to kind of go along with it too. I mean, there have been murmurs of some sort of revived S2000 or S2000-ish sports car for a little while. We heard something in late 2020
from like 2018 or 2019 that got at least into a rolling chassis phase. Let me try to pull it up.
I don't remember that one, but I mean, there was a report there that we covered back in 2020. You actually wrote it, Bruce. Don't you remember what you wrote 2.5 years ago?
Sure I do. Sure I do.
It was a report that actually came from Forbes, obviously enough. That cited a source close to Honda that a revived S2000 was at least under consideration. That was back in 2020, using the engine from the Civic Type R. At that time was what?
I do remember this. The
306 horsepower engine, the turbo engine. So, I mean, there's that from 2020. If I remember correctly, there was another report earlier than that. The report earlier than that contradicted all of that, saying that in 2017, Honda's CEO said it's not time yet to reinvent the S2000. But that was 2017. Guess what?
Right.
That's 6 years later. Yeah, I had to count that out in my head because I don't do numbers, people. Don't get angry at me. 6 years later, times have changed. 75th anniversary. Maybe it's time. I am a huge, huge, huge S2000 fan. So Honda, if you're listening, do it. One last hurrah with a high revving, high strung four cylinder before we go full EV for 75. I mean, this falls on kind of a no brainer to me, but I also recognize you're talking about probably its own platform, yep. limited volume vehicle for sure. But I mean, it's a halo car. It'll be a halo car. People right. will want to come into the dealership to see that, and then they'll end up buying the CRV that you want to sell them anyways. Mm-hmm.
So I can't find the one vehicle I was going to share, but I will pull this up here. I don't know if you remember from late last year. Let me find it.
While you're pulling that up, Brian Gurney says, to make a proper S2000 electric, they would need dual electric motors, but only on each rear wheel, give it some torque vectoring, rear wheel drive chemistry. I think that would be a pretty cool thing to do. I don't know how expensive that would be going with dual motors at each wheel. We're seeing that. I guess we're seeing individual motors on vehicles outside of crazy hypercars. But I mean, if they balance it out right, I don't think you would really need dual motors at each rear wheel. If you have a really nice, crisp 50-50 balance, just do it like the old S2000 did it. Just let it rotate on its own and hold on and have fun.
I don't know how easy that is to engineer with EVs though, versus combustion vehicles.
I think it's easier because you don't have to try to balance out a big weighty engine in the front.
That's true.
With extra ballast in the back, you just have your battery slung down low in the middle.
But anyway, I wanted to mention Honda showed these two concepts late last year and have not mentioned them since. They were part of like some big EV presentation, and this was the picture that got everyone's thoughts racing. And we don't know if it was just them trying to get people excited. We don't know if these are actual mm-hmm. vehicles. We don't know, but it's nice to think about.
Well, the Honda folks that are listening, I can keep a secret. I promise I won't. I promise I won't share anything with the Ramblers. I won't do any special little hand signs or gestures that might say otherwise. You can tell me.
Well, Smith, those are all the topics we prepared. We've got a little time if you want, or we can shut things down. What do you feel like? Okay, you're laughing. You got ideas.
The maniacal laugh going. I think there's something that we should share. Before I do,
you better share it because I don't know what you're talking about.
But before I do, just a reminder to everybody: you can catch us live 7:30 p.m. every Friday or every Wednesday. Sorry, 7:30 p.m. Eastern time. Motor One.com on Facebook, Motor One.com Twitter, Motor One on YouTube. You can comment along with us live like the folks are doing right now, or you can always catch us on audio. We go up every Friday morning, Spotify, Apple, Deezer, Amazon, iHeartRadio.
Okay. I'm going through all that.
I'm trying to build up a little of this. Do you remember, was it maybe 2 weeks ago where we were having a discussion about cars has something that you enjoy mechanically, i.e. behind the wheel, or the viability of a car has just a piece of art, whether it's okay to just enjoy it as a piece of art as opposed to not driving it. We have a McLaren Senna.
Okay.
I'm bringing this up right now, Bruce. I've got it this time around. We've got a McLaren Senna that's going to be appreciated as a piece of art. And I'm wondering how the Ramblers feel about this because it's kind of permanent. This is coming out of Australia. For our Ramblers listening in Australia, maybe you've heard about this over in Melbourne. The
Group
article.
FTC, aren't you in Australia? Is this your house? Article,
the article title that I have here, McLaren Senna lifted 57 stories to $39 million apartment where it can't be driven. This is a brand new high rise in Melbourne. And it's owned, or this particular apartment is situated right at the top of the high rise, purchased by Adrian Portelli, who I understand is a younger guy, but a fairly successful business person.
He better
likes cars. Bought this McLaren Senna, and he says, you know, it was just gathering dust in a showroom, so I figured I would put it into my brand new apartment. Now, $39 million is in Australian currency. In U.S. dollars, I think that translates to about $25 or $26 million. It's a lot of money, and actually, they kept one of the
FBC is in Melbourne, as they call it there.
Oh, really? Okay.
But he is not in a $39 million apartment.
but you've heard about it, I'm assuming, because apparently they had to close down the street to raise this guy's McLaren Senna up 57 floors to put it into his luxury penthouse, which from what I gather, they had to wait to put the windows together because it went in and then they put the windows up afterwards. They had to keep one of the construction cranes for the skyscraper, not like brought in a separate crane. They kept one of the cranes used to build the skyscraper in place after it was done, just so they could raise this car to put it in his penthouse. Now, obviously, you're not just going to dial up, you know, your crane owner operator friend and say, hey, you know what? I think I want to take the Senna for a drive. Can you come lower me down from my 57 story penthouse? One, because there's no door. It's in there and there's no way to drive it out. There's no way to crane it out. And I'm not going to go onto the political side where people are saying, oh, it must be nice to have that kind of, you know what? If you have the money and you want to spend it, you earn it, spend it however you want. I'm not going to go down that road. But it does raise the point here of this is decidedly an art car.
Yeah, this
no ands, ifs, or buts. You can't drive this if you want to, unless you're like Dominic Toretto and you're going to jump it from skyscraper to skyscraper like they did in Fast 7. Also, we don't know the size
of this penthouse. Can you imagine, like, oh, you're watching a movie, you got to pee. I'm not going to walk like a plebeian taking the Senna to the bathroom.
I'm going to take the Senna to the bathroom. I mean, if you go, I mean, we do have the Instagram account linked here in the article. So, I mean, let's take a look here at some of these photos. You can see here, let me jump back to my correct screen, being lifted up. And yeah.
Wait, is that the owner?
That's the owner. There it is inside. So I don't think there is enough room to like do any laps.
No.
Yeah, that's the only view that we have inside. So I mean, it is an art car. And in fact, a news report that I saw when I was writing that article, he even says, if I ever sell this penthouse, the car will probably just stay with it.
Oh, yeah.
Because I mean, I don't know how much it costs to bring in a building sized crane, block off, you know, a major street for several hours, disassemble part of a skyscraper to lower your car back down. But I mean, and it also got me thinking, okay, this car was probably, I mean, I hate to say never, but you're not going to just decide, hey, you know what? I want a little bit extra cash. I'm going to sell the Senna. How are you going to get it out? Anyway, we'll put it up for auction. You know, so yeah, it's now a part of this penthouse. And to that end, I mean, could you have purchased maybe? I mean, he bought the car obviously with the idea that hey, I want this car, and now I have it. But for something like that, I mean, wouldn't a shell or, I mean, I don't know. I mean, McLaren Senna is super rare anyways. Even from just the standpoint of art, I would be hesitant to make that kind of move because, I mean, that's it. You're not taking it back out of there, right?
No, it's there. It lives there now. Yeah, it makes you wonder, like, my mind goes through like 1,000 different things. Like, first off, okay, I have to get it out. I wonder, I don't know what Australian buildings are like, but I wonder if there's like a freight elevator and then you could put it on top of the freight elevator and take it down or something like that. You'd have to break through a wall to get it out the door, but
yeah, yeah. I mean, I don't know how this building is laid out. Group FBC, I think you, I mean, if you're in Melbourne, maybe you need to take a little bit of a day trip. Go check this place out for us. It's called Sapphire by the Gardens Tower, a new skyscraper that just recently completed. I got to think if there was a freight elevator, they probably would have taken it up that way.
Yeah, I don't know. That's the thing. If
one other aspect to the story, the price paid for the penthouse included picking the car up and putting it inside. So.
Oh, that's a steal then. That so
it was all built in, right?
That's a steal. But I also wonder, like, okay, let's say I was going to do that. What car would you put in your penthouse? Because it's Mustang not like two. You can switch them out. You get Mustang, one.
Mustang 2.
Okay.
Mustang 2. Nobody's going to miss it. And if I really get sick of it, I don't care if it gets pushed out.
Okay.
No. God, I don't know. If I were to bring, well, one, I wouldn't want to bring anything that could be driven. I don't want to.
Your friends, like some drunk night, they like fire up the Mustang to drive.
No,
it out the
but no, because because it's it wouldn't be hard in my mind to find a shell or find a wrecked car that you can just do cosmetic work on to be. If I want to have a piece of art, I want it to just be a piece of art with mm-hmm. no possibility of being driven, because I'm basically going to remove that possibility anyways. So why waste it? Why waste the resources of bringing something in with an engine and a fuel system and all of these other components?
That's fair.
I'll keep that for the garage that I never go to, because someday in 10 or 15 years, maybe I'll go to that garage and say, I wonder if this thing still runs.
Brian Gurney's got the best answer. Concept car. You can't drive them on the road anyway. They're not road legal.
Yeah, but if it still has the working powertrain.
But a lot of the always they're just rolling chassis anyway.
Oh, well, there you go. If you're talking about something with a rolling chassis, perfect definition right there. If you have even a concept car with a powertrain that can be driven, I wouldn't want to put it in a place where it absolutely becomes impossible to drive it. Even mm-hmm. just from experiencing it and enjoying it from a straight artistic standpoint, which is fine. I don't want to permanently take away the option of going for a drive with it if I want to, even if it's once every 20 years. And okay. I certainly don't want to do away with the option of selling it if it's a vehicle that can be driven.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Those are
kind of my take.
Perfectly logical arguments.
What do you think? Email us, podcast@moto1.com. It's been a while since we've got an email. We do the live thing.
We haven't gotten emails in a while. That's
we
true.
We love the interaction. So if you're listening to us after the fact and you're sad that you didn't get a chance to partake in this live conversation, you can still partake in the conversation. We will mention it in future podcasts. Email us, podcast@moto1.com. You have a McLaren Senna that you bought that you never drive. You have just purchased a very, very expensive eight-figure apartment building. Gorgeous view of the Melbourne skyline. You have this car that you never drive, but you could if you wanted to. Are you going to raise it up 57 floors and sentence it to a life off the road permanently? Email us, podcast@moto1.com. I legit want to know. Because this really goes back to the whole question of a vehicle has just a pure form of art versus
you're right. It,
versus the mechanical functionality.
Yeah. You're right.
Cause in my mind, it's different than enjoying it as a piece of art in a garage where the potential functionality is still there versus this skyscraper where the potential is now gone, even though it technically still has all of its components.
And it's even different than putting it in a museum. You think about, you know, like the Peterson Automotive Museum in LA or something like that. Those cars sit and they're static, but they also, at least some of them, are in drivable condition and occasionally get out and stretch their legs and things like that. But so they are still sitting there static as pieces of art, but that can change with either enough money or, you know, they can at least go outside when they want to. But this car is permanently in that building.
And I mean, I guess you could start it up and do a burnout in the one spot, but you know, are you going to fill your house with tire smoke? I shouldn't say that because I probably would. That would be a cool thing. Race fuel and tire smoke. Oh, such a good smelling combination.
Agreed. Yeah, interesting discussion. Good talk.
Yeah, good talk.
I think that's going to do it for today. Like we said, tentatively, we're not going to mention the person's name because it's still a bit tentative, but tentative guest for next week.
Very, very cool topic. If it goes through...
It's
extremely cool with an EV connection, even a little bit that we were talking about today. So a little bit of a preview there.
Tentative guest for next week, but I think that'll do it for tonight. As always, good afternoon, good evening, or good night, and good morning to Grupa FBC as that happens. We appreciate all of our listeners. We appreciate that you decided to spend time with us out of all of the other things that you could be doing. It's just super nice. And Smith already went through Motor1.com or Motor1 basically on every social media or, you know,
follow, online. Smash the buttons, do the share comments, thing,
all of it. Stuff. And also send us an email. Cause like we were saying, we haven't received an email in a while. So just tell me what car you would put in a penthouse, podcast@motor1.com. Yeah. But with that, I will tell good evening to everybody. So bye-bye.
Bye, everybody. We'll see you later.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Military veterans and active duty service members, you could become a certified cyber warrior with just 12 weeks of training at My Computer Career. Cybersecurity specialists are in high demand, and IT pros with these skills often enjoy abundant opportunity and a great lifestyle. Protect our people, liberty, and treasured institutions from cyber threats. SkillBridge and other VA benefits are available to those who qualify. Learn more at mycomputercareer.edu/CWP. That's mycomputercareer.edu/CWP.